This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
Zachariah Raetano and Saman Rahmanian have had quite the year. In October of 2017, with their co-founder, Rob Schutz, they launched their technology healthcare company, Roe. By handling everything from an online diagnosis to delivering your medication, they hope customers will be able to take better care of themselves so they aren't thrown by what can be a difficult process. Their first vertical, Roman, focuses on men's health, and the second, Zero, aims to help people quit smoking. While growing their company from 5 employees to 100, they also met a major funding milestone, closing an $88 million Series A round in September of 2018. So what's next? You'll hear more from Zachariah and Saman in a moment, but first, a word from our sponsors. Fundrise is the future of real estate investing. Fundrise enables you to instantly access high-quality, high-potential private market real estate projects from high-rises in D.C. to multifamily apartments in L.A. Each real estate project is carefully vetted and actively managed by Fundrise's team of real estate pros. The platform's innovations power an investor-first model by eliminating the bloating costs and middlemen that have traditionally weighed down real estate investing, saving investors time and money. Fundrise's unparalleled transparency and real-time reporting let you see how the development of specific properties impact your overall portfolio. Visit fundrise.com/HSH. That's FUNDRISE.com/HSH to have your first 3 months of fees waived. Again, that's fundrise.com/HSH. And now for our second sponsor. If you have a business or know someone who does, you probably know that small business owners wear a lot of hats. And some of those hats are totally great, but some, like filing taxes and running payroll, for example, not so great. That's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses. Fast and simple payroll processing, benefits, and expert HR support all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes, so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits and even 401ks for your team. Those old-school, clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way modern small businesses work. But Gusto is. So let them wear one of your many hats. You have better things to do. Listeners get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. Try a demo and see for yourself at gusto.com/HSH. That's gusto.com/HSH. For someone who doesn't know what Roe is,
sure.
Can you talk about what the company does and why it was important for you guys to start it?
Yeah, absolutely. We started with Roman, which is an end-to-end service for men's health. We have Zero, which is an end-to-end service for addiction starting with smoking cessation. And all of that is powered by Roe. But usually the first thing that people usually ask about Roman is, why did we start with erectile dysfunction? Mm-hmm. And the first thing is what most people don't understand about ED is that it's often the first sign of a far more serious underlying condition. Diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol. It's commonly associated with obesity and depression. And when it's not, it's usually a sign of poor lifestyle habits. So smoking, drinking, lack of sleep, stress. And for me, I actually experienced it at a shockingly young age. I was about 17, 18 years old. I was very lucky in the sense that my dad, who is our physician in residence, he's the old guy in our office that looks like Benjamin Franklin. He was a physician and an expert in sexual health. So he actually did one of the landmark studies for Glaxo on Valtrex. And so growing up in that household, he created an environment that was great and one where I felt comfortable bringing that up to him. So after asking the typical questions that a doctor would, he ended up bringing me to one of his friends who was a cardiologist, and I had a stress test. I don't know if you've ever had a stress test before.
I actually have.
But it's pretty hard.
It's stressful.
It's
yeah.
Stressful. Very apt name. And you basically run on a treadmill. It gets steeper and faster, and you see how your heart does. And I'd played sports my whole life, but my heart peaked 230, 240, and then I collapsed. And I zipped off, went to zero, zipped off the treadmill, and I was very lucky it happened in a doctor's office. My dad and the doctor ended up bringing me back. And then a few days later, I had a heart procedure where they basically went in and they burnt the parts of my heart that were causing it to beat regularly. Fortunately, my heart was fixed. Some poetic irony in store where the main side effect of my heart medication was erectile dysfunction. Yay. So navigated that. And then actually about 2 years ago when I was working at a venture studio with Rob and Saman, I started to experience heart symptoms again. I'm doing all better now, but went through blood tests, stress tests, heart monitor again, and I remember at the end, my cardiologist re-prescribed the same exact medication. And my first response actually was I blurred out everything that he had said about my heart, and I knew that the present impact that that medication would have on my life. I've had a partner for 5 years, and at first I was actually... I was pretty disappointed in my own response, right? Because I knew that obviously the health of my heart is far more important in the long term. But after actually bringing up that insight to Rob and Saman, rather than being disappointed by it or embarrassed by it, kind of embraced it, which is this idea of there are these present pain points that people experience that do prevent them from thinking about their long-term health, right? If you're 30 pounds overweight and you walk into a doctor's office, they really only see the things that can kill you. They see diabetes and heart disease, but not the thing that might affect you day to day, that is preventing you from tackling those longer term issues. And so for us, we started with ED because it was indicative of someone's underlying health, but it also enabled us to build a strong patient-physician relationship and solve someone's present pain point. And then we've consistently worked on increasing that bond and then working towards attacking the underlying cause and improving and reducing the friction for someone to take care of those things. So, for example, a large percentage of our members smoke, which is why we started Zero, because smoking cessation actually can decrease the symptoms of erectile dysfunction in addition to smoking being the leading cause of preventable death. So that's just that's the lens that we look through, and one of the reasons why we started. But I think that similar personal experience, the personal experience that I have is also, Saman and Rob have had their own, and they're able to look at it through a very, very similar lens, which at its core is enabling someone in the one-liner for Roe is personalized healthcare for everyone. Mm-hmm. And we think a lot about that from the technology experience to the product to the patient experience.
And I also think when we were looking at it, and to go to your question around why we then, changed it to the focus to be really on Roe as the healthcare technology company. What we didn't want to build is we didn't want to build a men's health company. We didn't want to build a company around ED. We wanted to build a healthcare company that was really handling everything from diagnosis all the way to delivery of treatment. And we started with ED, and we felt that was a really good way to start a company this way. But at its core and in infrastructure in the background, we built essentially what we call the healthcare triangle, where we run the operations and the software for patients, for physicians, and for the pharmacists. And we really try to really iterate and hone the experience with one condition, with ED, and then under Roe, really powering the different conditions. Since then, we've been able to expand into additional conditions as well as additional verticals. And I think one of the things that we've really seen is that there's this massive shift that's happening towards this type of experience where people just see telehealth and telemedicine as a more convenient way, a more personalized way, and just a more precise and better medical care experience.
Yes, because healthcare can be so incredibly complex and difficult to navigate. So I can see why having the technological side of things might make people feel a little maybe less freaked out or anything like that, just because it's so bit more personal.
And it's also, you could imagine, given a lot of the conditions are tough to talk about from both a patient's perspective and a physician's perspective, right? You could imagine it's very difficult for someone to answer 12 consecutive questions about the strength of their erection, right? Or the frequency or strength with which they're experiencing general or oral herpes outbreaks. That's difficult for doctors, even though it is very clinical. It's difficult sometimes for doctors to talk about and for patients to feel very comfortable sharing that information. But when you can do it with technology and someone can do it in the comfort of their own home, they can expound in as much detail as they feel comfortable, then a doctor can look at that information. And then actually when they do have, let's say, if they do have a phone call or a video chat along those lines, all of it is actually about the nuances of it. It's about the treatment. It's about any other questions they may have. And so that can provide a far more safe and comfortable environment, as well as one that allows the physician, in some cases, to actually provide higher quality of care.
Yeah, so what have been kind of the challenges of working in the healthcare space?
There's no shortage. I think our business touches so many different regulatory bodies, right?
Yeah, sure.
The FDA, the FTC, state telemedicine laws, medical boards, state pharmacy laws, and I think that the healthcare system, from a patient's perspective, is very disjointed. And when there is a disjointed system or disjointed industry, the burden is placed on the individual with the least amount of power or control. And in healthcare, that's the patient.
Yeah.
And so I think the biggest challenge is actually trying to take on all of that complexity on behalf of the patient so that they don't have to, right? So they shouldn't have to know the idea of refills, prescriptions, doses. Is this question a question for a doctor? Is this question a question for a pharmacist? How do I go about titrating my dose or personalizing it? They should actually just be able to communicate their pain points, their symptoms, their desires, and have a dialogue with a physician or with a pharmacist and really get the treatment that is ideal for them and be guided through that whole experience without actually knowing all of the nitty-gritty that doesn't affect them.
Well, how can you know all of it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? They shouldn't have to know all of it. They shouldn't know they should basically not have to know who to go to. They should just know the question that they personally have, and it's on us to take on all of that complexity for them. And it's a challenge. I think that the challenge is the opportunity. All of the hard parts about interacting with the healthcare system, I think, are the opportunity for us to make it really simple for members.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the same way. I think for folks who want to create a startup or a company in the healthcare space, you just have to be comfortable with really getting to know the law and the regulatory side of things really, really well. And I think on our side, we just embrace that complexity. But I wouldn't say that we were actually too afraid of it. I think we were much more excited about what we could do in the space. Mm. When you compare our type of service with what people have to go through right now if they don't come to a service like Roe. They have to make an appointment to go to a doctor. On average, they wait 29 days to get that appointment, go to the doctor's office, fill out yet another clipboard with your medical information, wait in the waiting room, have a conversation with a physician where often the majority of the time in that conversation is spent on collecting information, which is just not a very inefficient way of doing things. And in our case, you come to our platform, you usually go through an online visit that takes, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. All the information is collected asynchronously so that when a physician is really reviewing your file and reviewing your record, they can really focus on the medical care, providing the medical care, because we just removed those inefficiencies. And to us, that was the thing that was much more exciting. And you just have to embrace the regulatory side of things. I think we've seen companies and startups that have disrupted incumbents where they're going against, you know, certain regulatory bodies in the past. At some point, it will come to a point where you just have to work with them. And I think we've very early on decided that we will not only, you know, understand them really well, but then also get involved in the conversation around policy and regulatory change, because we see that is a shift that's happening and it needs to happen even more. So.
And I think the stakes are also different, right, from a regulatory perspective. It's not, I think Saman brings up a fantastic point, where it's not like Ubers and taxis or sort of the incumbents versus this new disruptive brand. The FDA's intention is to make sure that people get safe and effective treatment. And medical board's intention is to make sure that physicians are treating patients appropriately. And so I think from our perspective, it's actually about embracing those and then trying to translate into a wonderful member experience rather than trying to like work around it, if that makes sense.
No, it does. So you guys officially launched last year. You've had kind of this really kind of rocket ship trajectory as far as like raising money. you raised $3.1 million in a seed round and then $88 million for your Series A.
Yep.
So does that kind of leap, like, change your perception about, like, value? Does it freak you out? Does it make you, like, thrilled to, you know, kind of do the next step? Like, how did you think differently about, like, goals and success for the company throughout that process?
Any single time you raise money, sort of the scoreboard resets. Mm. And I think that's really important for founders to understand, is that it is, it's really just fuel, right? So if you're driving a car, where the car is going is the most important place. And that is what all of the focus should be on. Now, fuel is really important and you need fuel to get there, but filling the gas tank is not success in and of itself. Right, and so I think that that is really important. And then once you fill that tank, the only thing that happened is the goalposts just moved. The expectations have all changed. For us, the reason that it is exciting is because it actually allows us to bring more of our vision into a reality. Mm-hmm. But the expectations have definitely increased in proportion to that. But I think for us, that's really why we wanted to raise that amount, is because we actually saw that it was working so well that more, let's say, fuel on the fire could let us offer affordable and personalized and convenient healthcare to more and more people.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I think we certainly felt that there was pent-up demand in the market for a service like this, and we felt that there was a perfect storm. I think even us, we weren't really sure how big of a demand there was for this type of service, and I think it just goes back to this shift that's happening, where we compare it pretty much to what happened 20 years ago with the shift towards e-commerce, mm-hmm. where people got really comfortable with the idea of going online, putting in a credit card, and getting something delivered to their home. Today, people are getting comfortable with the idea of having a doctor's visit online and then getting the treatment sent to their home, even to the point where more and more diagnostic devices are FDA approved, where you do not have to walk into a doctor's office to get your heart monitored, for your blood pressure monitoring. That can be all done at home. Mm-hmm. And we saw that coming, but we joked. So we set, our 1 year goals like at the beginning of our, you know, before our launch. And rather than it taking 1 year to go through, it took us a couple of weeks to go through our 1 year goals. And that was just something that we felt that there was, and things were just so much more. I think like the interest was just so much higher than we anticipated. And we just had to Z's point, we just had to readjust all our expectations. And raising a lot of capital is great, but it really just means that you're just, you know, shifting your expectations.
How did you start working together, and why do you think your partnership works well?
The TLDR, Saman hired me, actually, kind of. I was working on my last startup. I actually returned the majority of funds to investors to take care of an immediate family member of mine. This place called Prehype, which is actually a venture studio downtown. It's this wonderful place for founders. It doesn't actually have too much process. Everyone kind of just goes and hangs out.
It's by design.
But it's by design, intentionally so. And so basically, you spend about half your time serving as the innovation team for a lot of Fortune 500 companies, building different products, different software, and then half your time exploring new ideas. Mm-hmm. And I showed up, and the leader there, Henrik, who also co-founded BarkBox, sort of kind of Mr. Miyagi'd me into just spending more and more time and working there. And then Saman comes over and asks me to help on a different project that he was working on, and we started working together more and more. And when you ask like why I think our partnership and why our partnership with our third co-founder Rob works really well, is I think there's a couple key things. Is one, I think there's mutual admiration. I think you have to admire your co-founders for all of their strengths and their weaknesses, but really look up to them. And I learned from Rob and Saman constantly. And I actually told Saman before we started this, actually when I was working for him, that I would completely happy being his right-hand man and follow him through whatever wall he wanted to go towards. It just so happens that we're working together. The next thing, I think you need incredibly complementary skills. So I think the three of us very much look at ourselves as a three-legged stool, where mm-hmm. If one leg didn't exist, the business wouldn't exist. And I think that is something actually really important that founders should look at, where if you think you could build nearly as a successful company without that person, that person's not the right person to partner with. I think we all believe that we are greater than the sum of our parts. The next thing is I do think you have to be willing to work for them. I think it's actually a wonderful measure because you can't ask something of your team, right? You're asking your team to work for that person. You can't ask something of them that you're not completely willing to do in a parallel universe. Yeah. And then I think it's actually how each one of you take feedback. Because I think if you think about our company a year ago when we were 5 people and we're 100 now, we're a very, very different organization. And in the same way that the same product, while it was suitable for the member base back then, was not suitable for the member base now, and it needs to go through multiple iterations, is the same way that an individual is not the individual that is needed to lead this company now, and the group of the founding team that is needed to lead it now is not the same exact founding team that was needed a year ago. And I think the only way you can get there actually is if you are really focused on actually being pretty egoless. And that takes time. That takes time where someone gives you feedback and it usually stings. But it will sting for a shorter and shorter period of time. And like, instead of 2 weeks later being like, "Oh, you're totally right," it's 10 seconds later.
Right.
And I think that actually is something that we focused on because we'd all started companies before and had been through that, focused on from the very beginning of making sure that, we admired one another, were willing to work for one another, had very complementary skills, and then also could iterate as a team, both how we together worked as a team, but also how we worked individually. And so I think that's, like, if I had to distill it, that's some of the main reasons why I think it works incredibly well.
I think that's totally right. I think it's not just about finding the right co-founder. I think it's also figuring out how you want to continue the relationship with your mm-hmm. co-founders.
Sure.
I think most people focus on who is the right co-founder I need to get and then assume that things will go well, right? Usually, if you do not work on your relationship, it usually deteriorates, right? So I have that with my wife. If we don't catch up, my wife and I, on a regular basis, mm-hmm. we become shorter to each other. We're not, as empathetic to each other. So one thing that we did, so maybe first on the selection of the co-founders, I truly think the idea really doesn't matter what you're going to build. I think you should really focus on, there's some founder product fit that makes, that should come into your consideration. But I think first you should focus on who do you want to spend, for the next couple of years. So the time that you want to spend with somebody, usually I think should be someone that shares your value system.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really important because it will affect how you hire, how you treat people in the company, what things are important to you in the culture, because all the things that are part of your value system really then trickle down into your culture of the company. And those are things that I feel should not be really complementary or different. They should be, I think, pretty similar in terms of your worldview and your value system. If those are fundamentally different, you're going to have a lot of issues in the future. And then definitely on the complementary skills, as much as you can have different overlaps or little overlap. And then on the relationship, you really have to work on relationship hygiene with your co-founders. So we've said it from the beginning. We would and I was a big fan of making sure, even if we didn't have anything to talk about, for one day a month to actually go out of the office and have an offsite. And at the beginning, it just seemed sometimes odd to the company when half of the company was basically gone for a day. And I remember our VP of product, Jess, she would say, when I saw you guys for an entire, in the calendar for you guys leaving entire day, it just seemed really weird that you guys would, leave the work. But then after one or two offsites, I really saw the value of those because you guys came back much more aligned and also come back with more strategic guidance. And those are the things that I feel have really helped in hopefully making sure that the culture of the company is somewhat, in a healthy way, and also that all three of us are always aligned and we have, in addition to the offsite, we sit next to each other, and that was by design. We decided that we wanted, even though we're 100 people, rather than being with the teams, we felt it was first more important that the three of us sit next to each other, because if the three of us are in line, then the rest of the organization will be aligned as well. We can probably have an entire podcast just on co-founders. It's very similar to, I think it's marriage. And what's interesting is I read a lot of I read parenting books, and then I read business books, and then I read, you know, relationship books, and they're all basically the same thing. Yeah. You know, like the parenting advice that you get is pretty similar to advice that you get for business advice. So we're all human beings, so, you know, in just different settings.
Which just leads right into my last question, which is sort of, what's the long-term goal? Like, how do you make sure this isn't a moment, but something that's sustainable?
I think the one-liner North Star for us is personalized healthcare for everyone on the planet. Mm-hmm. And then I think this idea of how do we get there? I think that's actually, and Simon speaks about this a lot, so I don't want to take too much from it, but the idea that you need, what point on the horizon are we all working towards? It needs to know very strategically what are basically the steps to get there, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not enough to just say this is the point on the horizon, but the tasks to accomplish that strategy and implementation. And then the third thing is to work with other amazing people. If you have those three things and you're aligned on that North Star and those tasks to accomplish that North Star, I think that's actually where you have this magical experience that we've had thus far.
It's also interesting, right? The first time when I started my company, my previous company, I felt that it was my role as the founder to figure out exactly what it is that we should be doing and then just hire the people to come and execute against it. And I realized over the years how flawed of an understanding that was. The way we look at things now, we have a North Star, but I would really say that this is a North Star that the exact way of how to reach it is very much up to the team. And I think like the evolution that I've personally had is, rather than hiring a team and people to come and execute against your vision, you should really hire people to tell you where you should go. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the first who, then what principle, right? First, get the right team on the bus, and then together figure out where you want to steer it. And that's, I think, the best way to ensure that you're not driving, that this is not just a moment and this is something that's long lasting. Yeah. If you manage to attract really strong, really experienced, good people to your team, if you have a mission and a vision that's somewhat clear, the rest sort of like works itself really out, you know? I personally spend much less time now worrying about what it is that we do, and I spend more time about who the people are that should make those decisions on what we do. Mm-hmm. And I think that usually will hopefully, turn into a more long-lasting company. We talk a lot about building not, you know, a company that's, you know, looking at what the valuation can be in 1 or 2 years. We look at a goal of how can we become an institution that can last for decades and decades. And that requires, I think, ultimately the focus should be on the people and the team, because if you get the right people on your team, then they will adapt to the times, and whatever our mission and vision is, the execution and manifestation of it, that will have to change. In 3 years, we will have to do things very, very differently than the way we're doing it now. And the best way to ensure that you're adaptable is just getting people to be on the team. And I think that the second piece is to push decision making down throughout the organization, which is another thing where I think a lot of founders have a problem with doing that, where they feel like they have to make all the big decisions. We feel that doesn't create a very healthy organization where important decisions are only made at the top. We try to disseminate decision-making process throughout the organization, and this way, you know, hopefully, like, lead to better outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, if every future product had to come from us, I think our company would fail very, very quickly. And so I think, you know, Simon said it perfectly, so I won't add too much, but this idea of hiring people that are consistently better than you at whatever it is that the company needs, and just making sure, frankly, that you can remove roadblocks.
And maybe the fourth thing that I would add is, I think, continually adding context to people. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we've seen is, if you want decision making to be done, to be happening across the organization. The way good decisions are made is basically based on two things, right? One, do the people have the right skill and the craft to do those decisions, right? Are they experienced enough? And then the second, and that's important because very smart people can make really bad decisions if they don't have the second piece. And the second piece is context. If people don't have full context into what it is that you want to be doing, what it is, where you are as an organization, then if they have both of those, good decisions will be made. And the best way to drive context is by being as transparent as possible.
Yeah, definitely.
So at our organization, at our, you know, all hands weekly meetings, we even share all the way down to how much money we have in the bank, because we feel that everyone on the team should know and have full context into where we are as an organization, where we are as a business. And that's the responsibility of every leader in the organization to pass on context, because ultimately that's, I think, a really good way to just disseminate, you know, decision making.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.